good in the catalog, and now seem shabby next to the other presents.
You'd need a wallet as big as the Grand Canyon to hold El Patron's paper money, Celia had said, and you'd have to drain the Gulf of California for the small change.
The farmers, one and all, gave weapons. Guns that responded to one's voice. Lasers that could burn an intruder to a crisp from the other side of a wall. Flying mini-bombs that clamped themselves onto an enemy's skin. The latter were programmed to recognize specific people. Tamlin took the weapons away the minute Matt unwrapped them.
"Open your presents, mi vida," El Patron said after a long while.
His eyes were half-closed, and he looked almost bloated with all the gifts he'd received. A mountain of new possessions surrounded his wheelchair. Matt eagerly tore open a small box from Celia. It was a hand-knitted sweater. Where she'd found the time to knit, Matt didn't know. Tamlin gave him a book, identifying edible plants in the desert. El Patron gave him a battery-driven car, big enough to sit in. It had flashing lights and a siren. Matt was too old for such things, but he knew the car had been very expensive, and therefore that El Patron loved him very much. Maria snatched away the present she'd brought him.
"I don't want to give you anything," she cried.
"Give that back," Matt said, angry that she'd made a scene in front of everyone.
"You don't deserve it."
Maria started to run away, but she was halted by her father, Senator Mendoza.
"Hand him the box," said Senator Mendoza.
"He was mean to Tom."
"Do it."
Maria wavered for a moment and then flung the box as far away as she could.
"Pick it up and bring it to me," Matt said.
He was in a cold rage.
"Let her go," said Tamlin in a low voice.
But Matt wasn't in any mood to listen. Maria had insulted him in front of everyone, and he intended to make her pay.
"That's the stuff," El Patron said gleefully. "Make your women toe the line."
"Get it now," said Matt in the same cold, deadly voice he'd heard El Patron use on terrified servants.
"Please, Maria," Senator Mendoza coaxed gently.
Sobbing, she retrieved the present and thrust it at Matt.
"I hope you choke on it."
Matt was trembling, and afraid he'd lose control and start crying too. Suddenly, he remembered what El Patron had said earlier.
"Is she your little girlfriend?"
Why shouldn't Maria be his girlfriend? Why should he be different from everyone because he was a clone? When he looked into the mirror, he saw no difference between himself and the others. It was unfair that he was treated like furball when he had good grades and could name the planets, the brightest stars, and all the constellations.
"One more thing," Matt said. "I demand a birthday kiss."
Gasps ricocheted around the crowd. Senator Mendoza turned ashen, and he put his hands protectively on Maria's shoulders.
"Don't do this," murmured Tamlin.
El Patron beamed with delight.
"It's my party, too," said Matt, "and I can have anything I want. Isn't that so, mi patron?"
"It's so, my little fighting cock. Give him the kiss, girl."
"He's a clone," Senator Mendoza cried.
"He's my clone."
Suddenly, El Patron wasn't the jovial birthday host anymore. He seemed dark and dangerous, like a creature you might stumble on in the middle of the night. Matt remembered Tamlin's words about his master.
"He grew large and green until he shadowed over the whole forest, but most of his branches are twisted."
Matt was sorry he'd started this whole affair, but it was too late now.
"Do it, Maria," said Senator Mendoza. "I won't let it happen again. I promise."
The senator didn't know that Maria had kissed Matt on several occasions, just as she kissed Furball and anything else that pleased her. Matt knew this was different, though. He was humiliating her. If it had been Tom asking for the kiss, no one would have cared. People would have thought it cute for a boy to flirt with his novia. Matt wasn't a boy. He was a beast. Maria came up to him, no longer angry or rebellious,
She reminded him of Felicia bent sadly over her plate. For an instant, he wanted to say, "Stop. It was a joke. I didn't mean it."
But it was too late. El Patron was watching them with obvious glee, and Matt realized it might be dangerous to draw back now. Who knew how the old man might punish Maria if he had his fun spoiled now? Maria leaned forward, and Matt felt the cold brush of her lips on his skin. Then she ran to her father and collapsed in tears. He gathered her up and shouldered his way through the crowd. The paralysis that had seized everyone broke. Everyone started talking at once, not about what had just happened, but about anything else. But Matt felt their eyes on him, accusing, disgusted, repelled. El Patron had wearied of the excitement. He signaled Tam Lin and Daft Donald to take him away and was already being carried up the steps before Matt noticed. The party went on with renewed spirit now that El Patron was gone, but no one talked to Matt. No one seemed to notice he was even there. After a while, he gathered up his smaller presents, leaving the battery-driven car for the servants to attend to. Matt made his way to Celia's apartment and laid out Celia's sweater and Tamlin's book. Then he opened Maria's gift. It was a box of taffy she'd made with her own hands. He knew because she'd told him about it ahead of time. She was no good at keeping secrets. Matt knew Maria hoarded things, worn-out shirts, broken toys, and gift wrapping paper, and she got hysterical if anything went missing. Celia said it was because she'd lost her mother when she was only 5. One day, Maria's mother had walked out of the house and never returned. No one knew where she'd gone, or if they did, they weren't talking about it. When Maria was small, she imagined her mother had gotten lost in the desert. She woke up at night crying that she could hear her mother's voice, but of course, she couldn't. Ever since then, Celia said, Maria had hung on to things. It was why she rarely let Furball out of her sight, and why the dog was such a wimp. Maria had cut squares from her treasured gift wrapping paper and used them to wrap Matt's taffy. He felt terrible looking at them. Why hadn't he listened when Tam Lin told him to let her go? He closed the box and put it away. Celia had drawn the curtains in his room. As always, she had lit the candle in front of the Virgin. The Virgin looked shabby with her chipped robe and cheap plastic flowers, but Matt wouldn't have wanted her to look any other way. He crawled under the covers. Feeling around, he found the lump that was his stuffed bear. He would have died rather than admit to Maria that he still slept with it. Chapter 12. The Thing on the Bed. Matt woke up feeling gritty and hot. The candle in front of the Virgin had burned out, leaving a waxy smell that the curtains held in. He opened the window, wincing at the sudden invasion of sunlight. It was late morning. Celia had already gone to work. Rubbing his eyes, Matt saw Maria's present on a shelf, and the birthday party came back with hideous clearness. He knew he had to make things up to her, but he also knew she needed time to cool down. If he approached her now, she'd only slam the door in his face. Matt dressed in cool clothes and found leftover pizza for breakfast. The apartment was empty, the walled garden deserted except for birds. He went out and watered the vegetables. The day after a birthday party was always a letdown. The power Matt enjoyed as El Patron's clone vanished. The servants went back to ignoring him. The Alacrans treated him like something Furball had coughed up on the carpet. The hours dragged on. Matt practiced on his guitar, a skill he was developing without Mr. Ortega's help. The music master was unable to keep his hands on the instrument and thus was unable to detect mistakes. After a while, Matt switched to reading Tam Lin's present. The bodyguard was fond of nature books, although he read them at a painfully slow rate. Matt already had books on wildlife, camping, map reading, and survival that Tam Lin fully expected him to study. Tam Lin drilled him when they went on expeditions in the Ajo Mountains. All Matt's activities were supposed to be risk-free. Thus, he was allowed to ride only safe horses, and he could swim only if 2 lifeguards were present. He could climb ropes
only if there was a mountain of mattresses underneath. Any bruise or cut was treated with extreme alarm. But once a week, Tam Lin took Matt on educational field trips. The trips were disguised as visits to the Alacrang's nuclear power plant or the opium processing plant, a stinking, clanking horror even an idiot would find unbearable. Halfway there, Tam Lin would turn the horses toward the hills. Matt lived for these expeditions. El Patron would have had a heart attack if he'd known how many cliffs Matt climbed and how many rattlesnakes he'd teased out of the rocks. But they made Matt feel strong and free.
"May I come in?"
said a faint, uncertain voice. Matt jumped. He'd been daydreaming. He heard the person enter the living room.
"It's Felicia,"
said Felicia hesitantly, as though she weren't quite sure of her identity. This is completely weird, Matt thought. Felicia had never shown the slightest interest in him. "What do you want?" he asked.
"I thought I might visit."
Felicia's eyes looked heavy, like she might fall asleep at any moment. A vague odor of cinnamon hung around her.
"Why?"
Matt knew he was being rude, but when had the Alacrangs been anything else to him? Besides, there was something creepy about the way Felicia swayed back and forth.
"May I sit?"
Matt pulled a chair over to her, since it didn't look like she'd make it by herself. He tried to help her, but she pushed him away. Of course, he was a clone. He wasn't supposed to touch humans. Felicia half fell into the chair, and they stared at each other for a moment.
"You're a good musician,"
Felicia stammered, as though it hurt her to admit it. "How do you know?" Matt couldn't remember ever playing when she was around.
"Everyone says so. It's such a surprise. El Patron doesn't have a musical bone in his body."
"He enjoys listening," Matt said. He didn't like to hear El Patron criticized.
"I know. He used to listen to me."
Matt felt uneasy. He'd probably taken away what little attention Felicia got from other people.
"I was a great concert pianist once," she said.
"I've heard you play."
"You have?"
Felicia's eyes widened.
"Oh, the music room. I was much better before I had my...
"Nervous breakdown?" said Matt. Her hesitant speech was getting on his nerves.
"But that isn't why I came. I want to...
Matt waited impatiently.
"Help you,"
finished Felicia. There was another long pause as Matt wondered what kind of help she thought he needed.
"You upset Maria. She cried all night."
Matt felt uncomfortable. What did Felicia have to do with this?
"She wants to see you."
"Okay," said Matt.
"But she, don't you see, her father won't let her come here. It's up to you."
"What should I do?"
"Go to her,"
cried Felicia with more energy than Matt had expected.
"Go now."
The outburst seemed to exhaust her. Her head drooped, and she closed her eyes.
"You wouldn't have something to drink," she whispered.
"Celia doesn't keep alcohol," said Matt. "Should I call one of the maids?" he said.
"Never mind,"
Felicia sighed, rousing herself enough to stand.
"Maria's waiting at the hospital. It's important."
With that, Felicia made her way to the door and drifted into the hallway like a cinnamon-scented ghost. The hospital wasn't a place Matt went willingly. Set apart from the rest of the buildings, it was surrounded by a wasteland of sand and low, flat bullhead vines. The vines protected their turf with the meanest, nastiest thorns ever, and could even stab through shoes. Matt picked his way carefully through the wasteland. Heat radiated off the ground,
making the gray, windowless building shimmer. The hospital was like a prison, with a strange, alarming smell inside that permeated everything. Matt was dragged there twice a year to undergo painful and humiliating tests. He sat on the front steps and inspected his sandals for bullheads. Maria was probably in the waiting room. It wasn't too bad there, with chairs and magazines and a cold drink machine. Sweat ran down Matt's face and stuck his shirt to his chest. He opened the door.
"I don't see why I should talk to you at all," said Maria.
She was sitting in one of the chairs with a magazine open on her lap. Her eyes looked puffy. "It was your idea." Matt bit his tongue. He wanted to make up with her, not pick a fight.
"I mean, it was a good idea." "You're the one who invited me," said Maria. "Why couldn't you find somewhere nice? This place is creepy."
Matt's alarm system went on at once. "I didn't invite you." "Wait," he cried as Maria started to get up.
"I do want to see you. I guess, I was a pig at the birthday party."
"You guess?" Maria said scornfully.
"Okay, I was. But you didn't have to take back the present."
"Of course I did. A present's no good if it's given in anger."
Matt stopped his first reply before he could get out.
"It's the nicest gift I ever got."
"Oh, sure. Nicer than that weenie sports car El Patron gave you?"
Matt sat down next to her. She moved away as far as she could.
"I really like how you wrap the candy."
"It took me a long time to decide which papers to use."
Maria's voice trembled.
"You'll only wad them up and throw them away."
"No, I won't," Matt promised. "I'll spread them out carefully and keep them for always."
Maria said nothing. She stared down at her hands. Matt edged closer. The truth was, he liked it when she kissed him, even if she kissed Furball 60 times as often. He'd never kissed her back, but he might try it now, to make up.
"Good, you're both here."
Matt recoiled. Tom stood in the doorway.
"How did you find us?"
Matt snarled.
"Of course he knew where we were. You told him to bring me here," Maria said.
"No kidding," said Matt.
The pieces were falling into place now. Tom had pretended to carry a message to Maria, and Felicia had done the same with Matt. They had to be working together. Matt had never thought of Felicia as dangerous, but he didn't really know her.
"I thought you might like to see something," Tom said.
His face was open and friendly, and his blue eyes shone with innocence. Matt wanted to roll him in the bullheads.
"Here?"
said Maria doubtfully.
"It's like Halloween, only better. It's the ugliest, gooshiest thing you ever saw, and I bet both of you wet your pants," Tom said.
"I've done things that would make your eyes drop out," Maria sneered. "Tamlin showed me how to pick up scorpions, and he let a tarantula walk up my arm."
Matt was surprised at Maria's daring. Tamlin had shown him the same things, and Matt had almost done what Tom described.
"This is worse," Tom said. "Remember that Halloween when you thought the chupacabras was outside and Matt put chicken guts in your bed?"
"I did not. It was you," cried Matt.
"You put your hand right in it," said Tom, ignoring Matt, "and screamed your head off."
"That was so evil," Maria said.
"I didn't do it," protested Matt.
"Well, this is worse," gloated Tom. "I don't know if you have the, pardon the expression, guts for it."
"She doesn't," said Matt.
"Don't tell me what to do."
Maria got a mulish look in her eyes, and Matt's heart sank. He knew Tom was up to something foul, but he hadn't figured out what it was yet.
"Come on, he's only trying to start trouble."
Matt tried to grab Maria's hand, but she yanked her arm away.
"Listen."
Tom opened the door leading from the waiting room to the rest of the hospital. Matt's stomach hit rock bottom. He had bad memories of some of those rooms. Tom's face glowed with joy. It was then, Matt had discovered, he was most dangerous. As Tamlin said, if you didn't know Tom well, you'd think he was an angel bringing you the keys to the pearly gates. In the distance, they heard a mewling sound. It went on for a moment, stopped, and began again.
Is that a cat?
Said Maria.
If it is, it isn't yowling for milk, Matt thought. There was a level of terror and despair in that sound that made the hair stand up on his neck. This time, he did grab Maria's hand.
They're doing experiments on cats,
Maria cried suddenly.
Oh, please, you've got to help me rescue them.
We'd better ask permission first, said Matt. He was deeply unwilling to go beyond that door.
No one's going to give us permission, Maria stormed. Don't you see? Adults don't see anything wrong with those experiments. We have to take the cats away. Data will help me, and the doctors won't even know where they've gone.
They'll only get more.
Matt felt cold as he listened to the sound going on and on.
That's the dodge people always use. Don't help anyone. They'll only find more illegals to enslave, or poor people to starve, or cats to torture.
Maria was working herself into a state. Matt despaired of getting her to listen to reason.
Look, we should ask your data first, he began.
I won't listen to that cat suffer one more instant. Are you with me or not? If not, I'm going by myself.
I'll go with you, said Tom.
That decided Matt. There was no way he was letting Tom take Maria by herself to see whatever horror he had stashed away.
Maria strode down the hall, but she slowed the closer they got to the cries. Matt still held her hand. It was cold and sweaty. Or maybe his hand was. The sound wasn't exactly like a cat. It wasn't like anything Matt had heard before. But there was no mistaking the anguish in it. Sometimes it rose almost to a shriek, and then faded, as though whatever was making the noise was exhausted. They arrived at the door. It was closed, and cravenly, Matt hoped it was locked. It wasn't. Tom threw it open. Matt could hardly register what lay on the bed before them. It rolled its eyes and thrashed helplessly in the straps that restrained it. Its mouth opened in a horrible O when it saw the children, and it screamed louder than Matt thought possible. It screamed until it ran out of air, then it wheezed until it didn't have the strength to do that anymore, and then it lay there, panting and gasping.
It's a boy, whispered Maria.
It was. Only at first Matt thought it was some kind of beast. So alien and terrible was its face. It had doughy, unhealthy skin, and red hair that stuck up in bristles. It seemed never to have been in the sun, and its hands were twisted like claws above the straps that held it down. It was dressed in green hospital pajamas, but these had been befouled by its terror. Worst of all was the terrible energy that rolled through the trapped body. The creature never stopped moving. It was as though invisible snakes were rippling beneath the skin and forcing its arms and legs to move in a ceaseless bid for freedom.
It's not a boy, Tom said scornfully. It's a clone.
Matt felt as though he'd been punched in the stomach. He'd never seen another clone. He'd only felt the weight of hatred humans had for such things. He hadn't understood it because, after all, clones were like dogs and cats, and humans loved them. If he'd thought about it at all, he had assumed he was a pet, only a very intelligent one. Matt became aware that Maria no longer held his hand. She'd shrunk against Tom, and he had his arm around her. The creature, clone, had regained its energy and was screaming again. Something about the children terrified it, or perhaps it was terrified all the time. Its tongue protruded from its mouth and drooled saliva down its chin.
Whose?
Whispered Maria.
McGregor's. He's a real wreck. His liver's all eaten up with alcohol, said Tom in a casual, chatty way. Mom says he looks like something the Grim Reaper forgot to pick up.
Mom, thought Matt. Felicia.
Are they going to...
said Maria.
Tonight, Tom said.
I can't bear to look at him, wailed Maria. I don't want to think about it.
Tom pulled her away, and Matt knew he was enjoying every minute of this.
Shall I leave you two alone together? Tom inquired from the doorway.
Matt had trouble tearing his eyes away from the thing on the bed. There was no way he could be the same sort of being as that creature. It wasn't possible. The creature opened its mouth to make another horrible scream, and Matt suddenly knew who it looked like. It resembled McGregor, of course, because it was his clone. But McGregor was an adult, with differences that made it hard to see the connection. It was a lot closer to, close enough to show a kinship with... "It looks like you," Matt said to Tom.
"You wish! You wish!" yelled Tom, dropping his cheerful grin.
"Look, Maria, it has the same red hair and ears." But she refused to look up. "Take me out of here," she moaned with her face buried in Tom's shirt.
"I'm not like that thing," shouted Matt. "Use your eyes."
He tried to pull her from Tom, and she shrieked.
"Don't touch me. I don't want to think about it."
Matt was beside himself with frustration.
"You wanted to come down here to rescue a cat. Well, look at this. It needs rescuing."
"No, no, no,"
whimpered Maria. She was in a state of utter panic.
"Take me away,"
she wailed. Tom hurried her down the hall. He glanced back with a look of savage triumph, and Matt had to clench his teeth very hard to keep from running after them and pounding Tom to within an inch of his life. It wouldn't do Maria any good. It wouldn't do Matt any good either, except to convince her he really was a beast. Their footsteps died away. Matt stood for a moment in the hallway, listening to the mewling of the thing on the bed. Then he closed the door and followed them. Chapter 13. The Lotus Pond. Matt had to talk to someone. He had to do something to keep from howling like a dog at the horror of it all. He wasn't a clone. He couldn't be. Somehow, somewhere, a mistake had been made. Words he'd overheard from the doctor came back to him. Clones go to pieces when they get older. Was that going to happen to him? Was he going to end up strapped to a bed, screaming until he ran out of air? Tam Lin was with El Patron, and not even Matt was allowed into that heavily guarded part of the house without permission. He ran to the kitchen instead. Celia took one look at his face and hung up her apron.
"Finish the soup for me, would you?"
she told a junior cook. She took Matt's hand and said,
"Let's take the afternoon off, chico. The alacrans can eat their shoes for dinner for all I care."
Alone of all the servants, Celia could and did insult the alacrans whenever she felt like it. Not to their faces, of course, but she was less servile in their presence than the others. She, like Matt, was protected by El Patron. Celia said nothing more until they were inside her apartment with the door closed.
"Okay, something bad happened," she said. "Is Maria still mad?"
Matt didn't know where to begin.
"If you say you're sorry, she'll forgive you," Celia said. "She's a good kid."
"I did apologize," Matt managed to say.
"And she wouldn't accept it."
"Well, that happens sometimes. Sometimes we have to grovel to show we really mean it."
"That isn't it."
Celia pulled him onto her lap, something she rarely did now that he was older, and held him tightly. Matt's reserve snapped. He sobbed uncontrollably, clinging to her, terrified she would push him away.
"Hey, Maria won't hold a grudge. You have to make her a list of who she's mad at, 'cause she doesn't remember more than half an hour."
Celia rocked Matt back and forth, all the while murmuring comforting words he could hardly take in. All he sensed was the music of her voice, the warmth of her arms, the fact that she was there. Finally, he calmed enough to tell her everything that had happened in the hospital. For a moment, Celia sat perfectly still. She didn't even breathe.
"That little creep," she said at last.
Matt looked up anxiously. Her face had turned pale, and her eyes stared into the far distance.
"Tom is McGregor's son, you know," said Celia. "I shouldn't tell you these things at your age, but nobody gets a decent childhood in the Alagrang household. They're all scorpions. Boy, did El Patron have it right when he picked the name."
"How can Tom be McGregor's son? Felicia's married to Mr. Alagrang." Celia laughed bitterly.
Marriage doesn't mean much to this crowd. Felicia ran off with MacGregor, oh, years ago. I guess she got bored hanging around here. Only, it didn't work out. El Patron had her brought back. He doesn't like people taking his possessions. And MacGregor let him do it. Felicia was beginning to bore him. Mr. Alacran was very, very angry because he didn't want her back, but El Patron didn't care. Mr. Alacran doesn't talk to her anymore. He won't even look at her. She's a prisoner in this house, and the servants supply her with all the booze she can handle, which is a lot, let me tell you.
What about Tom? Matt urged.
Tom showed up about 6 months after she returned.
Matt felt slightly better after learning this information. It pleased him that Felicia was in disgrace, but he still had questions. He steeled himself to ask the most important one.
What's wrong with MacGregor's clone?
Celia looked around nervously. I am not supposed to talk to you about this. You weren't supposed to know about him. But I do know, Matt said.
Yes, yes. That's Tom's doing. You don't understand me, Vida. All of us have been warned not to talk about clones. We don't always know who might be listening.
Again, Celia looked around, and Matt remembered what Tamlin had told him about hidden cameras in the house.
If you tell me, it'll be Tom's fault, Matt said.
That's true. I really don't see how I can avoid explaining after what you've seen.
So, what's wrong with MacGregor's clone?
His brain has been destroyed.
Matt sat up straight when he heard that.
When clones are born, they're injected with a kind of drug. It turns them into idiots, said Celia.
She wiped her eyes with her apron.
Why? It's the law. Don't ask me why. I can't tell you.
But I wasn't injected, Matt said.
El Patron didn't want it to happen to you. He's powerful enough to break the law.
Matt was filled with gratitude for the old man who had spared him such a terrible fate. Matt could read and write, climb hills, play music, and do anything a real human might do. All because El Patron loved him.
Are there any others like me? He asked.
No, you're the only one, Celia said.
The only one. He was unique. He was special. Matt's heart swelled with pride. If he wasn't human, he might become something even better. Better than Tom, who was an embarrassment to the family. Then a horrible thought occurred to him.
They won't. The doctors won't inject me later.
Celia hugged him again.
No, darling. You're safe from that. You're safe for as long as you live.
She was crying, although Matt couldn't understand why. Perhaps she was afraid because she had said something in front of the hidden cameras.
Matt felt limp with relief. He was exhausted by all that had happened, and he yawned broadly.
Take a nap, mi vida, said Celia. I'll bring you something nice from the kitchen later.
She led him to his bedroom, turned on the air conditioner, and closed the curtains. Matt stretched out under the sheet and let a delicious sense of ease sweep over him. So much had happened. The disastrous party, the sinister hospital, MacGregor's clone. Matt felt hurt that Maria had run from him after seeing the thing on the bed. He would seek her out later and show her that he was completely different. As Matt drifted to sleep, he pondered why MacGregor would want a clone when he had a son. It was probably because Tom had been taken away from him by El Patron. And because Tom was an unnatural little weevil no father would like to have around.
But then, Matt thought hazily, why replace him with a horribly damaged clone?
Maria refused to talk to Matt. She hid in her father's apartment or managed to be with a group of people every time he saw her. But Matt had faith in Maria's intelligence. If he could get her alone and explain how he was different from all other clones, she would understand. MacGregor was back from his operation. He still looked, as Felicia put it, like something the Grim Reaper forgot to collect, but he was getting better all the time. He and El Patron sat in adjoining wheelchairs and cackled over old memories, rivals they had destroyed and governments they had overthrown.
Got me a new liver, McGregor said, patting his stomach. And went in for a set of kidneys while I was at it. He gazed at Matt with those bright blue eyes that were so much like Tom's. Matt thought he was disgusting. He couldn't wait for the man to go home. Maria would be leaving for boarding school soon. Matt realized he had to act now. As he watched her across the garden playing tag at a slow pace because she had furball in her side bag, the solution came to him. Maria didn't have the dog with her all the time. Now and then, Senator Mendoza banished him to the bathroom in their apartment. What if Matt stole the animal and sent her a ransom note? There was a pump house by the lotus pond. It was concealed by a giant wisteria vine and reasonably cool inside. Matt could hide Furball there. But how could he keep the dog from yapping? Even a spider swinging down in its web sent the animal into hysterics. He won't bark if he's asleep, Matt thought. Matt had spent a lot of time in the secret passage behind the music room. He liked to pretend he was a superhero creeping up on his enemies. He'd replaced El Látigo Negro as his hero with Don Segundo Sombra, Sir Second Shadow, an international spy. The Black Whip was for kids, but the Don did adult things like drive race cars and parachute out of jet planes. An even better hero was El Sacerdote Volante, the Flying Priest. The Flying Priest bombarded demons with holy water that ate holes in their scaly hides. One of the closets reachable from the secret passage belonged to Felicia. It was full, top to bottom, with liquor. More interesting, and useful now, was a shelf of small bottles with eyedroppers. They contained laudanum. Matt knew all about laudanum, having studied the opium business as part of his regular homework. Laudanum was opium dissolved in alcohol, and it was very strong. 3 drops in a glass of fruit juice would knock you out for 8 hours. Felicia had enough stored in her closet to knock out an entire city. It explained why she was so dopey all the time. Matt waited until he saw her dozing on a lawn chair, and then he hurried through the secret passage and stole one of the small bottles. The lotus pond was one of a dozen pools of water in the vast gardens of the house. It was deserted in summer because it had little shade. Ibises, with wings clipped to keep them from flying away, stalked through papyrus grass and hunted frogs under the lily pads. It was El Patrón's idea of an ancient Egyptian garden. The walls enclosing the place were painted with stiff figures of ancient gods. Matt pushed aside the wisteria and went into the pump house. It was dark and damp. He made a bed for Furball out of empty sacks and filled a bowl with water. He stepped outside and froze. Tom was on his hands and knees at the other end of the garden. His back was turned, and he was absorbed in watching something on the lawn. Matt eased carefully out of the wisteria. He moved quietly through the papyrus to sneak back into the house. An ibis rose from the grass. It flapped its mutilated wings and blundered across the pond. Tom jumped up.
You? What are you doing here?
Watching you, Matt said coolly.
Well, it's none of your business. Get back to your part of the house.
All parts of the house are mine, said Matt. He looked past Tom and saw a frog on the lawn. Its hind legs had been nailed to the ground, and it flopped frantically, trying to escape.
You're disgusting, Matt said.
He went over and freed the frog's feet. The creature threw itself into the water.
I was only doing a science project, said Tom.
Oh, sure. Even Maria wouldn't believe that. Tom's face flushed with rage, and Matt braced himself for a fight, but just as suddenly the anger drained away as though it had never been there.
Matt shivered. It bothered him when Tom made a lightning shift like that. It was like watching a crocodile submerge in a nature movie.
You knew the crocodile was planning an attack, but you didn't know when.
You can learn a lot from studying a place like this, Tom said in a casual voice. The ibises live on frogs, the frogs eat bugs, and the bugs eat one another. It teaches you about the meaning of life.
Tom had on his professional cute kid smile. It didn't fool Matt for 1 second.
Let me guess. You're on the side of the ibises, Matt said.
Of course.
Who wants to be at the bottom of the food chain? Tom said. That's the difference between humans and animals, see? The humans are at the top, and the animals, well, they're just walking T-bone steaks and drumsticks.
He strolled off, an easy, good-natured stroll, to show he wasn't concerned that Matt had disturbed his evil game. Matt watched him disappear into the house.
What rotten luck,
Matt thought. He didn't want Tom poking around while he was talking to Maria. If only he could slip Tom the laudanum. For a moment, Matt savored the idea, but he knew that would be going too far. Maria had the dog glued to her all morning and all through lunch the next day. Finally, Senator Mendoza said, "For God's sake, Maria, it stinks."
"Did you roll in something icky?"
she said fondly, holding the creature up to her nose.
"Did you, sweetums?"
"Get it out of here," her father snapped.
Matt was observing this from behind a wall hanging. He slithered along the curtains and followed Maria. If he could talk to her now, he wouldn't have to kidnap the stupid dog. She thrust Furball into her apartment and closed the door. Agonized yips broke out from the other side.
"Maria," began Matt. "Oh, hi. Listen, I've got to run. Dada will get mad if I don't come back right away. I just want to talk."
"Not now,"
cried Maria, dodging past him. She ran down the hall, her sandals slapping against the floor. Matt felt like crying. Why was she making things so difficult? Would it kill her to listen? He hurried to Celia's apartment to get a bowl of raw hamburger he'd noticed in the refrigerator. When he returned, he looked around carefully for servants coming down the hall. The minute he opened Maria's door, Furball yelped and scurried under a sofa.
"Great."
Matt picked up the side bag Maria used to cart the animal around. He opened it temptingly and placed a chunk of hamburger inside. The dog whined and drooled as he watched. Maria fed him a special diet recommended by a vet, but it didn't include raw meat. She didn't like the idea of raw meat.
"You want that. You know you do," said Matt.
Furball licked his chops. Matt held up a glob of the stuff and blew the smell toward the animal. Furball trembled all over and swallowed several times. Finally, he couldn't stand it anymore and darted out. In an instant, Matt had him trapped inside the bag. Furball snarled and tried to claw his way out. Matt poked a crumb of hamburger into the bag and got a bite that drew blood. Furball howled piteously. "Here, eat yourself silly," Matt cried, shoving fistfuls of meat inside. Matt heard slurping, gulping, and frantic licking. Then, miraculously, the animal stretched out in the bag and fell asleep. Matt peeked inside to be sure. This was even better than he'd hoped. He slung the bag over his shoulder, expecting outraged yips when the dog felt himself being moved. There was nothing. Furball was used to being hauled around. He slept in the bag all the time and probably felt safe wrapped up in his dark little cave. Matt could understand that. He was fond of dark hideaways himself. He left a note under Maria's pillow. "Meet me by the lotus pond at midnight, and I'll tell you where your dog is." He signed it, Matt. Then, "P.S. Don't tell anyone or you'll never see him again." Matt supposed the last line was mean, but he was fighting against impossible odds. He slipped out of the apartment, leaving the door ajar so it would seem the dog had worked it open. The halls were empty, and the lotus garden deserted, except for ibises meditating on the existence of frogs. Everything was working out perfectly. Furball stirred slightly when Matt laid the bag down in the pump house, but he didn't bark. Matt decided to leave him in the bag. He could come out when he felt like it and find water and the rest of the hamburger. Matt put the laudanum on a shelf. He was frankly relieved he didn't have to use it. As much as he disliked Furball, it seemed wrong to feed him the same stuff that turned Felicia into a zombie. Maria discovered Furball missing right after lunch. She enlisted everyone, except Matt, to hunt for him. Matt could hear voices calling, but anyone familiar with the beast knew he wouldn't answer. He would cower in whatever hiding place he'd found until dragged out, snapping and snarling. Celia was asleep when Matt left. Most of the hall lights had been turned off and black areas yawned between them. Not long ago, Matt would have been afraid to go out so late. He no longer believed in the chupacabras, or vampires. But the dark, dead stillness of night brought them back. What if Maria was too frightened to leave her apartment?
Matt hadn't thought of that. If she didn't come, the whole plan would be ruined. His footsteps echoed on the floor. He stopped many times to be sure no one was following him. He checked his watch. It was 15 minutes to midnight when the dead, according to Celia, threw off their coffin lids like so many blankets. Stop that, Matt told himself. The Lotus Garden was lit only by starlight, and the air was warm and smelled of stagnant water. Not a frond of the palm trees stirred. Not a mosquito whined. Somewhere in the papyrus, the ibises were sleeping, or perhaps they were awake and listening to him. What would they do when they realized he was there? Don't be a wuss, Matt told himself. They're only birds. They're long-legged chickens. A frog grunted, making Matt almost drop the flashlight he carried. He shone it on the pond. He heard a splash and a rustle of feathers. Matt walked as silently as he could toward the pump house. It would be truly awful to hear Furball whine right now. Maybe Maria wouldn't come. After all, if he was this jumpy, she must be terrified. But she'd come for her dog. Matt didn't underestimate her courage when she thought something was important. He reached the wisteria. Would it be better to wait here, or to check on Furball? He didn't much like going into the dark little house. Anyhow, if he went inside, Maria wouldn't know where to find him. He heard a noise. Floodlights lit up every corner of the garden. It was El Patrón's security system. Matt was blinded. He backed into the wisteria and was grabbed by powerful hands. Let me go, Matt shouted. I'm not an enemy. I'm El Patrón's clone. Daft Donald and Tamlin frog-marched into the middle of the lawn. It's me, it's me, Matt cried. But Tamlin remained silent and grim. Senator Mendoza came out of the big house. He stood in front of Matt, flexing his hands as though he had to keep them under control. For a long, long moment he said nothing. Then, you are worse than an animal. He spoke with such concentrated venom that Matt flinched back against the hands restraining him. Oh, I won't hurt you. I am not that kind of man. Besides, your fate lies with El Patrón. Another long pause. Just when Matt began to think the man wasn't going to say anything else, Senator Mendoza hissed. You can't count on one thing. You will never, ever see my daughter again. But why? Said Matt, startled out of his fear. You know why. Matt didn't. This was all a horrible nightmare, and he couldn't wake up. I only wanted to talk to her. I meant to give Furball back. I didn't mean to upset her, and I'm sorry now. Please, let me see her, to say I'm sorry. How can you possibly apologize for killing her dog? For an instant, Matt wasn't sure he'd heard right. Then the full enormity of the situation sank in on him. But I didn't. I wouldn't. I couldn't do such a thing to Maria. I love her. The minute Matt said it, he knew he'd made a terrible mistake. Senator Mendoza looked as though he wanted to strangle Matt right there and throw his body into the lotus pond. Nothing could have been more infuriating than a reminder of how close Matt and Maria had become. So close that Matt had demanded a kiss from her in front of everyone at El Patrón's birthday party. It was unthinkable. It was as though a chimpanzee had demanded to wear human clothes and to eat at the same table as people. Worse, because Matt wasn't even a normal forest-living beast. He was the thing on the bed. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Matt's mind had frozen. All he could think of was to keep apologizing until Senator Mendoza heard him and forgave him. You're lucky you're under El Patrón's protection. Senator Mendoza turned and strode into the house. Move along, said Tamlin, as he and Daft Donald propelled Matt from the garden.
I didn't do it, cried Matt.
I found your fingerprints on the laudanum bottle, said Tamlin. Matt had never heard him like this before. So cold, so bitter, and so disgusted.
I did take the laudanum, but I didn't use it.
They were moving rapidly through the halls with Matt's feet only brushing the floor. They arrived at Celia's apartment. Tamlin paused before opening the door.
"I always say," Tamlin said, breathing as hard as if he'd run a long way, "I always say, the truth is best even when we find it unpleasant. Any rat in a sewer can lie. It's how rats are. It's what makes them rats. But a human doesn't run and hide in dark places because he's something more. Lying is the most personal act of cowardice there is."
"I'm not lying."
Matt couldn't help crying, even though he knew it was a babyish thing to do.
"I can believe you made a mistake," Tamlin went on. "The bottle said 3 drops. That's the dose for a full-grown man. But Furball was a dog. A dose like that would kill him. Did kill him."
"Someone else gave it to him," Matt cried.
"I'd feel sorry for you if I hadn't seen Maria first. And I'd feel more kindly if you stepped up and took the blame you deserve."
"I'm not lying."
"Ah, well. Perhaps I'm expecting too much of you.
You're confined to quarters until Maria leaves. And now is as good a time as any to tell you El Patron is leaving at the same time. And taking me with him." Matt was so stupefied he couldn't speak. He stared at Tamlin.
"It had to happen sometime, lad," Tamlin said more kindly. "You're able to look after yourself now. If anything goes wrong, Celia can send a message."
He opened the door, and Matt was swept up by Celia, who obviously had been waiting on the other side. He couldn't talk to her. As had happened when he was deeply upset before, the power of speech left him. He was 6 years old again, master of a kingdom of gristle and bone and rotting fruit, hidden beneath the sawdust in a little room. Chapter 14. Celia's Story. Matt was inside his room when Maria left. He heard the hovercraft whine as it prepared to lift off. He heard the whoosh of air and felt an eerie stir on his skin as the anti-gravity vessel passed overhead. He had never traveled in one. El Patron discouraged such things, preferring to keep his farm close to the memory of his youth. As a boy, El Patron had observed the grand estate of the wealthy rancher who owned his village. He remembered a statue of a winged baby and a fountain tiled in blue and green. He remembered the peacocks that haunted the garden. In every respect, he told Matt, he tried to duplicate that memory. Only, of course, being vastly more wealthy, he could have dozens of statues, fountains, and gardens. The Alagran Estancia was laid out over a large area. No part of the house was taller than 1 story. The walls were a brilliant white, the roofs of fine red tile. Modern conveniences were kept to a minimum, except in special areas, like the hospital. Thus, Celia cooked over a wood-burning stove when El Patron was visiting because he liked the smell of burning mesquite. At other times, she was allowed to use microwaves. The gardens were cooled with fine sprays of water, and the rooms, for the most part, depended on shaded verandas to tame the hot desert air. But during the annual birthday party, modern conveniences came out. The famous celebrities would have been miserable without their air conditioning and entertainment centers. Not that El Patron cared whether they were miserable. He merely wanted to impress people. Matt listened for the purr of El Patron's limousine. The old man preferred to travel by road. If it had been possible, he would have gone by horse, but his bones were far too brittle to attempt such a thing. He would sit in the back with Tamlin for company. Daft Donald would drive. They would whisk along the long, shimmering highway to El Patron's other house in the Chiricahua Mountains. Matt stared up at the ceiling. He was too depressed to eat or watch TV. All he could do was play out the events of the past few days in his mind. He went over them again and again. If only he hadn't put Tom at the baby table. If only he hadn't made Maria kiss him in front of the others. If only he hadn't gone to the hospital. The regrets piled thickly on one another until Matt's thoughts were running around in his head like a hamster on a wheel. Everyone thought he'd poisoned Furball. His fingerprints were on the bottle, and he'd left a note, a signed note, how dumb can you get, in Maria's room. Matt had to admit the evidence against him was pretty good.
Tom must have seen him come out of the pump house and decided to finish the job he'd started when he dumped Furball into the toilet. But how did Tom use the laudanum without leaving his fingerprints on the bottle? Round and round went Matt's thoughts. Squeak went the wheel in his mind. He heard the limousine start up, the distant slam of a door, the fading roar of the engine. So, El Patron was gone now, and Tam Lin. Matt grieved for him.
"Any rat in a sewer can lie," Tam Lin had said. "It's how rats are. But a human doesn't run and hide in dark places, because he's something more."
Matt thought he could make Maria understand if he ever got to see her. She'd forgive him because he was a dumb animal and didn't know any better. But Tam Lin had called Matt a human and expected much more from him. Humans, Matt realized, were a lot harder to forgive. For the first time, he saw a huge difference between the way the bodyguard treated him and how everyone else did. Tam Lin talked about courage and loyalty. He let Matt do dangerous things on their expeditions and go off by himself to explore. He treated Matt as an equal. Tam Lin often talked to him about his childhood in Scotland, as though Matt were another adult. It wasn't like El Patron's memories, which tended to fall into a rut. Matt had those stories memorized right down to the last word. Tam Lin's stories were about the difficult decisions you made to become a man.
"I was a proper fool," the bodyguard had said. "Turned my back on my family, ran with a rough crowd, and did the thing that brought me here."
What that thing was, Tam Lin never revealed. At the memory of those picnics, tears came to Matt's eyes and rolled down his cheeks. He made no sound. He had learned that safety lay in silence. But he couldn't stop the tears. Yet in the midst of his sorrow, Matt found a glimmer of hope. Someone, out of all the people who thought he was no better than a dog, believed he could be something more.
"And I will be," Matt promised, as he stared up at the blurry ceiling.
Not everything was depressing. Tom was banished from the house. Maria, when she was hunting for her dog, had innocently asked her father to look in the hospital. Senator Mendoza wanted to know how she knew about the place. The whole story came out about McGregor's clone and Tom's part in luring Maria to see it. El Patron banished Tom to a year-round boarding school with no holidays.
"Why doesn't McGregor take him, if Tom's his son?" Matt asked.
"You don't understand," Celia said as she cut cheesecake with fresh raspberries for dessert.
Ordinarily, Matt would have demanded two slices. Now he didn't think he could choke down one.
"Once El Patron decides something belongs to him, he never lets it go."
"Never?" said Matt.
"Never."
"What about the presents he gets for his birthday?"
Matt thought of all the gold watches, jewels, statues, and moon rocks people had given El Patron for over 100 years.
"He keeps it all."
"Where?" Celia dished up the cheesecake and licked her fingers.
"There's a secret storeroom under the ground. El Patron wants to be buried in it. May the Virgin keep that day away forever."
Celia crossed herself.
"Like," Matt had to think, "like an Egyptian pharaoh."
"Exactly. Eat your cheesecake, mi vida. You need to keep your strength up."
Matt ate mechanically as he imagined the storeroom. He'd seen pictures of King Tutankhamun's tomb. El Patron would lie in a golden box with all the watches, jewels, statues, and moon rocks around him. Then, because Matt didn't want to think of El Patron dying, he said,
"What does that have to do with Tom?"
Celia settled back in her easy chair. She was much more relaxed now that everyone had left.
"El Patron thinks a person belongs to him the same way a house or car or statue does," she said. "He wouldn't let that person go any more than he'd throw away money. It's why he wouldn't allow Felicia to escape. It's why he keeps everyone under his control so he can call them back in an instant. He'll never let McGregor have Tom, even though he can't stand the boy."
"Do you and Tam Lin belong to El Patron?" Matt asked.
Celia flinched.
"Caramba, the questions you ask."
Matt waited.
Maybe you wouldn't get into so much trouble if people explained things to you, she said with a sigh. I didn't poison Furball. You didn't mean to, darling. I know your heart is good.
Matt badly wanted to argue his case, but he knew Celia wouldn't believe him.